Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Stargirl Squadcast. I'm Cameron.
I'm Adiba.
And I'm Tam.
And today we're going to be talking about Season 2, Episodes 3 and 4. Adiba, we really missed you last week.
I missed you guys, too. Oh, my God. It's so good to be back.
But it's okay, because we're here now, so it's all good.
For the listener at home, we're recording these out of order. And we're also recording Episode 8 and 9 on the same day. So we're recording 9 first, and then Adiba's going to leave, and then we're going to record episode 8. But yeah, so we're talking about Summer School chapters 3 and 4. Such inventive titles. The episode opens with the old JSA in Civic City. Specifically, it's Pat and Johnny Thunder who have been left behind on Christmas 2010. Now, here's the thing. I was looking at the newspaper. They moved Civic City to Nebraska. So this whole time,
no.
we were super confused about what was happening it's because Civic City has just been in Nebraska this whole time. So Blue Valley must be a suburb of Nebraska. I mean, it makes sense because there's that episode, I don't remember which one. Actually, yes, I do, 106.
It explains the cabin and explains the car being, and explains them being able to just take a little road trip to the JSA headquarters and everything.
Right. Now, I think it's pretty funny that the ISA moved to Nebraska to be closer to them instead of moving away from them. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
But, I mean, sure. It fixes some, not all, but some plot holes, so that's not good. Also, I saw on the magazine covers, not the magazine, the newspaper covers, that Starman's staff, with, like, the introduction to that was covered publicly. So
yes, so he, like, has no mask on in his picture too, so it's like
he okay, has no mask.
Know who he is.
He's also fully Joel McHale. Like, they introduce, he's introduced the Starman as Joel McHale, but like, wouldn't he be like our age starting as Starman and no longer being the Star Spangled Kid? Like, I'm a bit confused there.
They show, like, baby Sylvester in the Star Spangled Kid
right.
Framed newspaper, and he looks very young. And then it goes, like, 20 years later. Yeah, I would have been nice to see some newspapers that showed him, like, growing up. But Pat is also
right, yeah.
Ageless. Like, he's the same age, which is, like, interesting in itself.
Well, I think they do attempt to make him look a little bit younger in that they have him cover his face, which is, like, definitely an in-character thing to do, but also, like, I feel like that's to make him look kind of younger, because you don't get to see the full face.
I mean, to be fair to Luke Wilson, he does not age the way that everyone else does. Like, he ages very gracefully, so.
I think it's funny when Wildcat comes in, how he has his arms in those wraps. He doesn't wear the claws that Yolanda wears, which he doesn't wear them in the comics either. But it's funny to me that they talk so much about Wildcat having claws when he simply doesn't have the claws in the show.
What if it was, like, metaphorical? It was, like, a metaphorical
Maybe he found
claws.
Them annoying. What if
I don't
Ted
know how that
Grant
would work.
Actually slaughtered quite a few people, and he said at one point he was like, you know what?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like how easily I'm able to slit people's throats with these. I'm gonna take them off. I'm more comfortable with
right.
like just my fist because I'm a boxer.
That would
anyways.
Make sense.
With bludgeoning them
with
to death?
When Johnny Thunder is like, I got benched, and he literally sits on the bench. That's classic CW on the nose kind of behavior of
they love
a character doing
their silly little
thing
being on
that
the
they're
noses.
Doing. One last thing. When Ted tells Pat that, oh, you have a kid to look out for. There's nothing more important. That's kind of the first hint at Ted himself, you know, having a son. It's like, cause the fact that they made him be the one to say that, I think it was done on purpose. And later on, it is revealed that, like, in the season, like, Ted says, oh, yeah, I have a son. So it's like Ted's like, I would know. You have a mm-hmm. son at home. That's why you're not doing this. Which is like, okay, but you're doing it, but whatever. But I think that it was done on, like, that on purpose.
So then it cuts to the present day, and Mike is going along his route and he's throwing those papers, obviously. The thing that's really funny to me is that those are like real houses. Like they're not like a fake set that they did. So presumably they just had Trey Romano throw
Yeah.
those newspapers at a bunch of houses that people lived in. So I think that's super fun though. Like I kind of wish that like I mean, I don't actually wish that I would live there, but I think it's fun if like a fake newspaper just pops up at your door. Like
And
that's
they have like
fun.
another person on like a bike right after Trey picking up the newspapers.
There's one where like he just never gets it and it always lands on the roof. So for like 3 days in a row, the newspapers are just on the roof and not actually at the door, and I found that very funny. You didn't talk about Mike being bullied. That's so by Devin, Lutz, and
They
Marky.
have
That's the
names.
reveal that he's being bullied. Yes, he introduces himself. Like he actually like says their names.
Mike
Like
gets beat
fully
up.
his
Like
he gets Isaac
his
boned.
outfits are
His
torn
whole
up.
sweater's torn
Right, he
off,
gets
just like
Isaac. He
Isaac.
gets Isaac. But they come home and Courtney's like talking about the shade with her mom. Sorry, I'm mixing up episode 3 and 4 in my head because it opens similarly. But she's talking to the sh about the shade with Pat and her mom. And she says something along the lines of, "Leave this to the professionals," when she's
That was
talking
so
to her
funny.
mother. I kind of think that's really funny. Like, it's rude
I love
it was
Court's
for sure,
attitude. But like that,
it's very in
I
his
think it's fun
character.
how much I think it's fun how much more she thinks she knows than her mother does. So also, when Mike gets involved, nobody notices that he's like his clothing has been
That
torn.
is
Like
so
not Pat,
sad.
not Barbara, not Courtney.
Because no one's paying attention to
So
him. It sucks.
also, like Pat's just like immediately sidelining him, where he's like, "Oh, it doesn't concern you. Don't worry about it. Just go upstairs." Like, absolutely not being helpful. That's like a little bit of comic Pat showing through.
And then Mike gets a call from his paper route boss named Mr. Bloomkiss, which again is a hysterical name. And he says like he has a new customer and he wants Jakeem to take the extra customer. He doesn't want another house to have to ride to, and he says, "Oh, it'll be better in better hands." And he says that already, so like that's foreshadowing that it's like a turn. It's just a saying that he says, so he didn't. Oh, it's so sad when you think about it like that.
And then he changes into a different outfit, and it's very much a Johnny Thunder inspired outfit with the green. He's not wearing any pink highlights, which if he did that, that would be the extra mile. But it's like the same shade of green or like close to it.
His helmet has Buddy on the back, a sticker of Buddy.
I don't know why you would do that.
It's so cute.
It's a little like
He
I've never in
loves
my
his
life
dog.
seen anybody, but I've never in my life seen anybody put like glue stick a photo of anything on the back of their helmet.
He loved, that's why he got bullied. No.
Oh, there's also like a weird continuity thing where Mike looks wet. Like the second that the Thunderbolt comes out and starts talking to him, Mike looks very wet. And I don't know
I
why,
didn't notice
because you would
that.
think that they would like do the whole first part a couple times, get the shot, and then do the whole second part. And if they were going to reshoot that first part, you would think that they would do it after the Thunderbolt makes him dry again. But yeah, it's not that the biggest error. It's just like weird that they did that.
First of all, I think everyone who likes Mike can agree with me that this episode, you finally got fed because he just hasn't had as much content and he does very well. Like Trey is a great actor, so everything that he's given for the most part, it's very like fun to watch him actually be given material. And I was very happy to see Mike actually happy, like excited when he ends up meeting the Thunderbolt.
I'm not 100% on board with the characterization of the Thunderbolt that they do in the show, because like I not that I have like the best grasp of his characterization from the comics. Like I have read comics with him. I've read basically the entirety of Geoff Johns' run, but like I don't think that he ever felt like a ha ha, you have to do exactly what I say. or you, I have to do exactly what you say, like that sort of thing. Like he every time that he's there, he wants to be helpful. It's almost, it's more so sometimes people will trick Jakeem into wishing for something that ends up being bad, but it's not like the Thunderbolt is inherently tricking him, so I don't necessarily like that decision.
Maybe it's because Mike is not the one who's supposed to be having him, like, and
Maybe, and
it's
it'll be
kind of like
different with
a bad
Jakeem.
fit. And it'll be different with Jakeem. Yeah. I hope so, because I don't think it's fair for Jakeem either that he's dealing with such a troublesome, you know, like, because no one else is, like, everyone else, for the most part, except for maybe Rick, but again, it's not like Rick is wrestling with the hourglass, he's just wrestling with his own impulsions, but, impulses, not impulsions. But, like, no other character has to, except for actually Courtney and the staff. Okay, other than Courtney and the staff, no other JSA member has to literally, like, argue and fight with their own, like, superhero relic to try to make it do what it wants to do. Like, that's, like, a whole extra mental challenge, you know? It makes it difficult, and I feel like it would be pretty rough for Jakeem so far, but from what we were able to see with Jakeem, he was kind of very well able to do what he wanted to do. Like, I didn't see him struggle.
Yeah, he didn't have any. Yeah, I mean, there were things that
But
were
Mike
taken literally,
struggled.
though, like before. No,
Yeah,
but
but
he
I
like
think he
turned
wanted
a
it, right?
house
I
into
think he was
candy
happy with it.
somehow, and there was like a giant
Yeah.
burger. Like both of those things are not, like I don't really know
Yeah,
how those.
yeah.
How do you? The giant burger, I understand. I don't fully get how you accidentally turn a
I
house to
want a
candy.
gingerbread house. And then it just the house across the street, or maybe his own house,
But that's like such a
turned
weird
into a
command.
Okay, but
That's like
he's
a
like a little
thing to
kid. Of course, he's gonna
want.
ask for
Yeah.
like a gingerbread house.
The fact that he wanted it, it's also awkward. Like, it's so random for him to ask that in the middle of summer, but okay. Yeah, and he can't wish for the same thing twice, and that's established in this scene as well.
Right.
Which doesn't matter much right now, but that could be very, like, I feel like the longer this
Limiting,
show
yeah,
goes
later
on,
down the line.
it's going to become limiting. Yeah.
Yeah. We have Courtney and Pat and the rest of the JSA all talking about the Shade's background. No. Yes.
Which is so funny to me.
Yes.
Yeah,
Yes.
because like Pat, he brought out an entire whiteboard just to talk about the shade. And he's got like the little picture in like the middle.
I think it's nice that Courtney finally lets Pat finish a
Oh,
lecture.
yeah.
Yeah, she's just so desperate to learn about a bad guy too that she's like, okay, just tell me what you know. Give it all to me at once and then we'll be good to go. And Rick walks in late and he starts his dog lie, which is so dumb. It's the most himbo thing he's done
It's
so
so
far, is do that
funny.
dog lie. It's so funny. Yolanda's reaction is so
You don't have a
funny. She's like
dog.
looking at him, like from the beginning, she knows there's no dog. And but Beth is very happy for him. She's like, "Oh, you have a dog. Amazing." And you could tell he kind of feels bad. He's like, "Oh, don't look at me. There's no dog." But
I love that
yeah.
scene. Also, it's just so fun to see like the JSA just interact, you know, just be like kids for a while.
Oh, I know. That's what I love about these
Yeah.
episodes that we're covering
They
in
just
this
get to do like
episode.
dumb teenage
Just in general,
things.
it's like peak JSA content as teens. And we're introduced to the fact that Beth now feels like they're responsible for bringing justice to Dr. McKnighter because she's told by Pat that the
Right,
Shade
right. Which
kills
is not
Dr.
true.
Midnight. She doesn't know this, right? And at this point, she feels like it's her responsibility because the others were able to fight for the heroes that they took the mantle on for, and she didn't get that closure. And it's very interesting because this is the first time that we're kind of seeing Beth really kind of be
Yeah.
bloodthirsty a little bit for something. And you see Rick's reaction, and he's kind of
Yeah.
like not for that. Like you could see from the get-go, clearly he's already had his own revenge arc, and he's like, didn't turn out the way I wanted it to. So he's like, oh, let's not go there.
I think it's really interesting that the staff is known to incapacitate the Shade, but it can't actually fully do harm to the Shade. Like it can knock him out. And later they were planning on putting him in a tanning bed, which is pretty incredible. But like it they it can't,
Can't
like
believe Barbara has a
it
tanning
can't do
bed.
anything in the long term. I
And she
know, but it
brought it
can't
to
do anything in the long
Nebraska.
term.
That just happens to be in their garage.
Well, she was Californian for a while.
Yeah.
If you are from California, we apologize. The Notes App apology will be on our Twitter.
So then it cuts to Barbara. So Barbara goes to the Xerix locker. Not locker. Like, wherever they're storing all the Xerix stuff. And the Shade is already there. And I guess his superpowers include draining phone batteries. Because she, like, goes... Not only does she go to Reefport and it's not there. So presumably he, like, somehow teleported her phone. Unless she really did drop it. But he, like, 100% just took all the power out of it. Which I was... I feel like
he blacked it out, which is kind of cool.
But it's not like, light, though. It's electricity, yeah. So I don't really fully understand how that happened.
I'll allow it, because it was he's so creepy for no reason in this scene.
Yeah, he's being a creeper. I really appreciate Barbara in this scene. I think she's being wonderful. Mm-hmm. And then it goes back to Court and Yolanda in school. I'm actually kind of curious about Yolanda's headaches, because I, at no point have I thought that they're, like, brainwave trying to possess her, which I think some people have theorized.
You know,
like, I always think it's either PTSD or Eclipso. So, I don't know which one it was at this stage.
The whole brainwave possession thing, if you want to be completely, like, extremely transparent, that's a full-on joke that we made up back in 2020 that, like, at some point, like, in our server, our Stargirl server, like, I made up this joke. Like, we were talking about what would happen if, like, Rick was, like, possessed, right? And, like, I just randomly was like, oh, yeah, he was possessed by the ghost of Brainwave. Like, as a total joke, right? And then in this episode, they revealed that, like, Yolanda was getting headaches. And... that's when we all just went feral, because we had already came up with this total crack idea that, like, Brainwave's ghost could, like, possess someone and then get rejected.
See, but
right?
I've definitely seen it out of the server fandom. That's the thing, though. There are people that are fully 100% not on the server. No, but I know, but they're not even on Tumblr that I've seen, like, talk about it. And I don't know. I'm not a huge supporter of that theory. I feel like Brainwave should just be dead. Make Yolanda.
I want him gone.
Like, have to fight Brainwave. I don't like that storyline for her. I think that there are a lot better ones, like the one that we're getting for Freddy's.
I think it should be just done with it. Like, she should, like, especially because it's like, why is Yolanda the one whose trauma is lasting forever and ever and ever and it won't let her go? Like, especially because Henry King was such a horrendous person. Like, he had to die. Like, he had to die. Right, so it was just like, it feels almost like unfair that she's going through this much trauma.
Especially after everything that happened in season one, I think Yolanda just deserves a break.
So this is also the scene where we get, you've already seen it, potentially, presumably, for our clip breakdown that's, like, gonna be, like, the episode, like, thing that goes up alongside with it. And, like, if we put it on YouTube, it's the thumbnail thing. So we filmed that today, too. So if you've already seen it, this is the scene where the live Isaac reaction comes from, of Isaac just actively listening to Court and Yolanda's conversation. I think it's really interesting that he's listening in. Back when I was watching this live for the first time, I was like, oh, maybe he somehow already knows some stuff or is, like, already suspicious of them. Like, I thought that this scene was going to be more important than it was. It really wasn't. But, you know, I'm glad that Mac France got his paycheck.
I think he is suspicious. Like, recently we just came up with a theory that maybe Isaac is the one behind the blog of weird stuff happening at Blue Valley.
Right!
That was shown in Barbara's email.
Yeah.
In episode 10 of season 1. And, I mean, episode 11. Or was it 10? Or both?
It was one of those.
It was
But the
11.
Point is...
No, it was 10. It was 10. It was 10. It was 10. It was
10. I was right. Okay. He is suspicious. Like, he's actively eavesdropping right now. And his parents both are out of the picture, right? And the thing is, Isaac was there the night that his mother supposedly went on a hunting trip. I'm pretty sure he knows there was no hunting trip that night. Like, that doesn't make sense. So I'm sure Isaac is, like, trying to piece together some things. And also, he was there when his teacher dropped dead, a whole satellite came up, and then everyone, like, every adult froze.
Yeah. Right?
So, like, it's very interesting. I think he's kind of just, you know, I don't know what makes him choose to eavesdrop in this particular moment, other than the fact that maybe he's kind of creepy.
We actually had a little clip of Courtney paying attention in class. Shocking crazy development.
Yeah. Crazy stuff.
But I'm glad that she actually potentially is reading her book. Wonderful for her.
She realized summer school is not fun.
And then it cuts to Mike walking outside where he sees those same bullies now bullying a Girl Scout for cookies. And number one, bullying a Girl Scout who's like gotta be like a brownie scout, so in like first through third grade, that's just mean.
She's so second cute. Of all,
it's they terrible. They stole tagalongs, and whatever the orange one is, when I was a Girl Scout it was Do-Si-Dos, but I think they discontinued those. But they stole tagalongs. They're not gonna steal Thin Mints or like Samoas or any Samoas. Or like, what's the other ones that are good? They have like a bunch of s'more flavored ones now. Like, they're not going to steal any of those. They're going to go for the stupid tagalongs. Like, nobody eats tagalongs.
I have no idea what that is.
I don't
is.
Eat tagalongs, I guess.
Devin, maybe. Lutz, and Marky are not very bright boys. Shouldn't they have just grabbed the cash register?
Yeah, because that actually has, like, money in it.
And not, like,
you can buy, like, a million
cookies. No, they wanted cookies, though.
Actual money in it.
Well, you can buy whatever flavor cookie you want if you just grabbed the cash.
So the stop signs, so he says to make them stop.
Yeah.
And they literally, stop signs literally fall from the sky, which is not how I would take that literally. I would have taken that as you literally just like freeze them and they can't move.
But you know what? The show's camp, so of course they go with like the falling stop signs.
Courtney and Yolanda walk up on him at that moment. They bring him to the pit stop. Pat comes in. Pat's like, no. Mike is pretty happy that he is, like, he finally has something within the JSA.
Which is so fair, which is, like, it's about time that he feels like he can do something.
Yeah.
I love the scene where Pat asks Mike to actually give the pen back, and, you know Mike doesn't want to, but he actually does. I like that, like, Pat didn't have to actually forcibly, like just yank it out of him. And the fact that it went back to Mike, like, that was a good feeling. I feel like, as the audience, you're like, yeah, it chose Mike. Like, deal with it, Pat.
Pat has, like, a one-on-one conversation with the pen. Or, like, the Thunderbolt. And, like, everybody, it almost looks like, the scene must change because the JSA is gone when Pat is having a conversation. But it looks like Jeannie comes out of the pen, and then the next time that you see the pit stop, like, the where they're all hanging out, they've just, like, teleported. Like, it's a weird cut. Also, did you notice that Stripe's head moves when the Thunderbolt is interacting with it?
No, I didn't.
Outside, Mike is talking to Courtney, and he's saying that he's like her, which is very sweet and very sad. When she comes back inside to defend Mike to Pat, she mentions that Mike killed Icicle, which is the first mention this season, I'm pretty sure. And Pat says, like, oh, I try not to think about that. But you can see that Mike is kind of like, I also try not to think about that. Which, again, is revisionist history, Michael. But, like...
Michael.
Whatever.
I love that the JSA actually does stand up to Mike, though. And I'm so happy that they do. Because I feel like if they didn't, it would have been the last straw. And the fist bump between Rick and Mike when they get Pat to agree. I love that.
I really like the wish scene in general. Like, the shit, it's a very fun, like, I believe that all of that was improv.
It was.
Or, like, they just kind of were, like, make the wish yourself and we'll film it.
The friendship and dynamic I think that that's, and everything, yeah.
The dynamics are so fun there. Like, I need that for season mm-hmm. three. I need that, like, basically
season
the
three.
Whole time.
Every episode, exactly.
Every that's, single episode, that's what we don't wanted. Drop that energy for a second, please.
They were being best friends in that moment, and that's what we wanted to see. Like, that's what we wanted to see.
And then they come up with the final wish, and they give the postal code 68060. That postal code does not exist out in the United States. It actually, it apparently is one in Mexico, but in the United States,
is this why
it's
you were
not.
Googling postal codes?
Yes, this is why I was Googling postal codes. There's 68059 and 68061, but they're both an hour away mm-hmm. from each other. And they're on opposite, they're to the northeast of Lincoln, Nebraska. They're closer to Omaha. So
no idea where that is, but thank you.
Maybe Civic City is like around where Omaha is. I don't really know. But if Civic City is in Nebraska, I'm assuming that Blue Valley is to the north or south of Civic City. And it's in between that and Lincoln. Maybe. I don't know. Pat is being pretty dismissive about Mike and is like, all right, Mike, we're leaving you behind. Bye. Enjoy. And you can tell that Court knows that this is not going to go well. Like, you can see mm-hmm. it on her face where she, like, kind of wants to say something and be like, Pat, that's a dumb idea because do you know how many times you told me not to do something? But Pat is not helping when he's, like, bringing up snacks. He's like, there's pizza bites and, like,
and juice boxes. Like,
cheese sticks and juice boxes. Don't juice you love boxes? Those? Like, he is 14, right? So, like, what are you doing?
So then, also, I like the way it was directed where, like, the Thunderbolt, like, has a little pink fire at the location where they end up having found the shade. And all the JSA just slowly turn towards the map. Just the way that was done was very
yeah.
Scooby-Doo.
So Beth says something about the Zarek house being, like, a designated historic mm-hmm. house. And Rick says, it'll yes. be historic once I get my hands yes. on the shade. Which Courtney says, what does that even mean? And he's like, I don't know, I'm amped. And I love that line. I think that's probably my favorite Rick line.
I just want more nonsense in general. I think this show needs more filler quotes, more filler dialogue, more filler episodes. Just like teenagers doing dumb
things. No, I don't think
things.
It needs more filler. No, I'm a filler episode anti. I'm going to say that right here, right now. I do not like it when shows give me filler. However,
I feel like I just did something.
I enjoy goofing off.
I like woke
up. More goofing off. More
yes.
I can't. You can't. You can't manifest it. You listen. Now what? Now rewatching episode mm-hmm. 2, 3, 4, 5. Mm, 2, 3, 4. I'm like, all right, this is fun. I like this. Watching it week
Why?
To week
was
hell
so
for me.
Fun.
I was
I was
like,
having a great time.
Where is the plot?
Who needs?
Because it was like, because there's no, because there's like no plot
Who
happening.
Needs plot?
Courtney's scenes are the plot, and like everybody else is like not plot.
That's why,
and it's like
that's why
annoyed me to no end.
Six was like, you needed to lie down and
yeah.
go to bed.
It was like,
coasting and cruising. And we were like, these episodes
they
were
the
so
most
fun. And then
episode
6 came and smacked us in the
and
face.
And I refused to let anybody
we
slander episode 4.
For
I
that.
Manifested that. That was, the writers did that for me personally.
I loved episode 4.
No, I do like episode 4. Uh-huh. I just am saying that in terms of as mm-hmm. a viewer watching it week to week, as opposed to like when you binge it, it was really difficult. Like I had, like I think my favorite
Listen,
stretch
I'm
of
watching
episodes
the Flash
are
season 7 and 8 week to week. This is
watching
nothing compared to what they're doing right now.
I mean, you're right.
And then 7 and then 8 was just absolute hell. Like you had, it was one of those things where you had.
If
to
I
be
watched
there.
7, 8, 9.
Well, 6 was fun until
six,
it wasn't.
If I watched 6, 7,
yeah.
8, and I binged it. If I binged 6,
I would
7,
cry.
8.
I would
have
in
a
tears.
Heart attack, and I would not have survived. So I'm
think,
glad that that was spaced out.
I think if we're talking about, I think we're talking about back to back stuff that we're watching through this episode. 5, 6 is probably my
favorite.
Yeah.
5, 6 is really good.
And then 7-8 is also pretty good, but it's going to be very draining.
We're going to be doing 7 and 8.
Same thing goes for 9 and 10. We're going to be doing 7 and 8 in one episode.
That week I'm just going to be in tears. You guys, I'm a Cancer. Yep. You can't do this to me.
So they get in and they find out that the Shade has... It's funny because before, we haven't gotten to it, but in the episode before, when the Shade does eventually like show up for the first time in episode 2, and he asks Barbara, oh yeah, what you is don't... there to do? Is there tea? I was like, shouldn't you be asking where should I live? But he's like, oh, I don't need a hotel. I'm just going to live in this dead place because it's historic and it's free. So why not? And he's already, like, he's using all of these dead
people's, he's an antique dealer, like, duh.
Plates and... I get it, but it's still, like, it's still funny.
I love that he sets up a tea party.
He was really just prepared to have
a nice... Oh, he does! That was such a cute little thing.
It's very Mad Hatter.
Presumably not the DC character. Presumably the Alice in Wonderland.
There's a DC character?
Right?
Yes, I was talking about Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, Jervis Titch. Yeah.
I also want to say that this is in this tea party that Beth and Rick sit on one side and Courtney and Yolanda sit on the other. And I tweeted that. And Breck Bassinger, she said, like, priorities with, like, a little heart.
The way that also when the Shade was like, oh, Stripesy, clearly you could hear the disdain in the Shade's voice. He does not care or is not threatened.
I love Pat's face when he calls him Stripesy. Pat's face, he's like so annoyed. He's like, Jesus.
Yeah. The only JSA member the Shade liked was Charles.
The Shade hated everyone in the ISA.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he did not like that. He just not like Jordan Kent. And later on, he, like, calls Jordan and Brainwave both, like, super incompetent. Which makes me feel like he's not going to like Cameron next season at all.
No.
Which, I guess, there's no real reason for him not to, but I feel like if there's, for whatever reason, the two of them in, like, the same room or whatever. But he didn't like any of the Injustice Unlimited.
Is that
kids
why he let Isaac die? Because he's like, I don't know if he let Isaac die.
I wouldn't use that wording.
Okay, I feel like even if he wanted to stop Isaac from dying, he couldn't. You know, like, he doesn't have the power to.
No, I disagree. He fully walked in when he wanted to walk in the fight in episode 6, which is ridiculous because the Shade is like a 10-year-old child died. Like, okay, these JSA, ISA kids are also children, and they're about to kill each other, and he did not care. He was just like, I'm just here for Calypso, and, like, you guys can have your little fight. But, like, it wasn't just a little fight. They were, like, intending to kill each other. So I'm like, the Shade, you don't care about children, you just care about certain children. Obviously, that's okay. But, like, don't pretend that he's like, oh, children are, like, of my upbringing. Concern and like, whatever, like, that's not true. I'm calling him out on that. Two things. The first thing is hello, the Hour Knight moment when Rick literally pulls Beth back.
They're so cute.
That was a role reversal I don't think anyone saw coming, where she was the one that was like, actually, I want to beat him up, and Rick was like, you can't beat him up, I'm sorry. He pulled her back wordlessly. I think the way that was done, that was like
a cute moment.
It was like best friend behavior. But also, like battle,
they
like
are a
couple,
battle
couple kind of behavior at the same time, and I really enjoyed that. And then also afterwards, like what we said, that like, okay, Starcat was on one side, Hour Knight was on the other side, and Rick says, oh, if you try anything, I'm going to shove, like, teacups down your throat. Again, that's a very
dumb line.
But the way that he sits, like, he purposely sits, like, putting him a distance between the Shade and Beth. Like, he does that purposely because he's like, I'm going to be like a buffer, because you could tell that he's still thinking that Beth is gonna try something. I find it very funny that if Mike didn't interrupt, they really could have just had tea and like just discuss whatever it is they were gonna discuss, having tea. And in which case, I think it would have been very funny if like that conversation lasted another minute or two and they're all just very tensely like sipping tea and like arguing with each other, and maybe Pat's like, don't drink that or something. I don't know. It would have been funny if it was entertained for like a minute longer before Mike broke in.
Everything is kind of Mike's fault, but I absolutely don't blame him. Just because, I mean, Pat kind of was asking for it, the way that he was treating Mike. And it's very similar to what Courtney was doing in season one. So it's like nothing that we, the viewers, are not used to. I love the fact that the Shade just curb stomps everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's no competition. The Shade is absolutely ready to wipe the floor with them once Mike kind of runs in. So I like that happens because the JSA doesn't actually, in the long term of things, like in season one, they really didn't get any losses. Like, season one is basically, with the exception of losing Joey and Henry, which obviously are big losses, but like in terms of like losing battles, I don't think they lost one. So it's kind of refreshing to see that there is still some power scaling going on, or not power scaling, but like there's still some challenges that they're going to have to face in the future.
Right.
I really like Mike and Yolanda's heart-to-heart that they have. They don't really get paired up often.
Yeah.
I mean, Mike with anybody outside his family rarely gets paired up. But I think it's really important that they have this moment because they're both seeking comfort from each other. They both feel like maybe they can understand where they're coming from. Like, obviously, Mike feels like he disappointed them. He's a new superhero, whatever, and is seeking that verification from Yolanda. Obviously, Yolanda is talking to him in terms of having killed somebody. I also think Mike views him killing Icicle as an accident, as a shortcoming of himself, which is something that I didn't get up until like this point, the specific watch. Because the way that he says it, he says like, I guess I didn't really do it. I'm not actually a hero. Which to me implies that
That's not how I interpreted it.
Okay, how did you interpret it?
Yolanda is very concerned about the fact that she killed someone, right? And so she's trying to ask Mike, and she's like, well, was it an accident? And the way he hesitates, he goes, yeah, I guess it was. I feel like he doesn't believe that. It almost felt like, for me, the way that he said it is kind of like the way that when Pat is like, oh yeah, you're gonna be okay, and like, we're not, this family isn't splitting up, and like, you know, like from season one, and he's like, yeah, sure it is, like, as in he's not being honest. So for me, I kind of felt like Yolanda gave him an out, and he kind of knew that he did kill Icicle, and he believed he killed Icicle. It wasn't an accident. But then Yolanda kind of said, was it an accident? And he kind of just went like, yeah, it was, even though he doesn't really think that. It's just the way that he hesitates, because he's kind of like, and I feel like you would know. You have a gut reaction. It's a yes or it's a no. You know, like, Yolanda is like, I killed someone. And I feel like Mike would have been like, I didn't do it. That wasn't, like, what I meant to do. And he would have been more convinced with that if he really didn't think, like, if it was really an accident.
I really like Court standing up for Mike. Mike wishing it into better hands, obviously, is a callback to Jakeem. Although I wonder, is the pen still going to work for Mike? Like, if Mike wishes things, because he's not dead. He's still, like, a master. So, like, is it possible that it would still work?
I don't know how the pen works completely, so
they share BFFs who share something. That's actually a cool take.
I also think Jenny.
I don't think I've seen before.
Yeah, I think it would be. I think I want it to be Jakeem for the most part, but I think that if like should Jakeem be incapacitated, Mike should still be able to use it.
Right, and it's a very hard power. Like it would be cool if like Mike was able to help him come up with like.
Jenny needs to calm down. In terms of, she's like showing up in his bedroom, and she's like, Dad's just gonna say what everybody knows. You're a loser! And she, like, does the thing where she makes an L on her forehead. I do that all the time to my
old brothers.
Which is so ridiculous. Like, I have a younger brother. I've not once did that. When I was a little kid,
still do it.
I got on a yoga ball, and I bounced on his head for a really long time on his birthday, and then when he got upset,
I did it, like, 2 hours ago.
And I leaned in front of the TV, and I was like, are you gonna cry about it?
Yeah.
You're gonna cry, baby, because I was a mean kid with issues. But I never called him a loser.
I always say,
like,
you're
that.
A loser.
With the L. I probably have called him a loser.
In the little sing-songy voice, too.
I went once traumatized my sister because she said that my nose looked like a hamburger, and I chased her all around the house, and I, like, forced her to take it back on camera, and she was, like, terrified. But, like, it was
weird.
So, you know, it wasn't that bad.
Barb, I think once the thing is away, like, once the pen is gone, Barb is talking and saying, like, oh, I don't have any powers or anything special, but, like, I still can be helpful. And I really think that she really needs to instill that principle in Mike. Because Mike absolutely harbors these insecurities in not being in the main JSA, which I don't blame him for whatsoever. But I think that they should be explored, and I think that they should pair him up with Barbara. Not like they don't do it already, because there definitely are a lot of Mike Barbara scenes. But they really should.
Well, that's why it's interesting that they're together in the season 3 poster.
Yeah.
On the same, I'm like, that's interesting to me. Yeah. I just thought about the fact that we talked in the beginning of the episode, Mike is wearing a outfit that kind of is like a tribute to Johnny Thunder with the green, and how Jakeem at the end is wearing only the pink. And I'm like, well, put them together and you have a full Johnny Thunder, right? So it's kind of like they were half and half. But like, I still think, like, Jakeem and Mike should be a team. Like, they are a team. Jakeem's the one holding whatever. But, like, Mike as, like, the next stripe, like, that's the duo, right? So it's kind of cool that they were kind of incomplete. And the fact that they're both apparently completely and utterly alone is very interesting. Because aren't they best friends?
Yeah, because I thought they're friends. Yeah, I don't know how that works.
So they don't talk to each other about important stuff. And I feel like that's something that should be further explored probably in the next season. And that might cause problems for frenemies. Like, that might actually be insecurities that they're kind of have to deal with.
I turn the floor to you.
For what?
The Our Night scene.
Okay.
Okay, we knew this was coming. When we were watching it at the time,
this literally changed everything because
we just didn't know, like, for what? Because for the trailer, it had the part where Beth was saying, everything's falling apart. And we were like, oh, we know that's an Our Night scene. But we weren't
sure.
And
there was, like, this interview that came out. And
Adiba, did you
have things? Like, this entire scene, it was teased so much because there was an interview that came out. And I forgot who, but someone mentioned that there was a romantic, not romantic, but, like, Our Night scene. And everybody got so, so, so excited about it. It was so good. I loved it.
Oh, okay. So, for me, with the thing with that scene, first of all, okay. So, they had their whole thing with the Shade and Mike, and everyone went home except Beth went, no, I'm still going to fix Chuck, because she thinks that whatever... They had a loss and they failed, and she doesn't have, like, Chuck working the way that she wants it to work. So she kind of feels, like, on her revenge path, like, I need to go and fix this. And obviously she's dealing with the fact that she thinks her parents are divorcing, and that's really, really what's bothering her. But she's kind of throwing herself into the work with the Shade coming in and wanting to be able to have justice for Dr. McKnighter. I get that. But what's funny is that, so she goes back to the pit stop, and clearly Rick goes, guess I'm not going home, I'll come with you, I'll just watch. Right. Because he's just dead, he's just watching her do it. Like, moment. That's what I find really funny. And not even like, oh, I'm kind of reading a book. Like, no, he's fully just staring at her, watching her do computer stuff. Which, to me, that makes me think they were there for a while, and she's getting more and more, like, frustrated. So she's probably, like, typing very loudly on her laptop. Mm-hmm. And he's, like, now actually just, like, watching her, like waiting for her to snap at some point, right? Because then she goes, oh, it's not working. And so it's just, for me, the thing that really shocked me, but it didn't, because I heard this side of Rick in the last episode of season 1 when he told her and she was crying, like, okay, it's okay, and he was super soft, is the softness in his voice when he's like, okay, what's going on? And then talk to me.
He's such a loser. He's so in love.
It's just so sweet. Like, he knows that Chuck is her best friend, right? And so he's like, but you don't have Chuck. And he's like, but it's basically what he's trying to say is that, like, okay, but I want to be your best friend. That's basically what he's saying, which is so sweet.
Which, for him, is because, such like, a huge thing. I thought Rick, he didn't care for anybody. Because, you know, he was always, like, the introvert. He still is, but he's always, like, the one who's like, I don't want to talk to anyone. I don't want to hang out with anybody. I just want to be by myself. And then for him to be the one who's like, I want to be your best friend, but only specifically you.
And not
that
only
is
that.
Such.
Right. But yeah, he's just like, just you. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, not only that, but Rick is so used to talking about his problems. He loves to go, I have so many problems. My parents are dead.
Yeah.
No, everyone thinks I'm a loser. So, like, et cetera, et cetera. And that's, like, what he brings up. But he's actually like, I want to listen to what's wrong with you. And, like, that is, I think, the thing that he has no patience for almost anybody else. Except, I would say, in episode 7, mm-hmm. when Yolanda's freaking out, then he really does try to understand.
But even then, he's thinking of, like, what Beth has to say about the situation.
Yeah, yes, I know, but we'll get there. That's hilarious.
This heart-to-heart was so good. I remember everyone on Twitter like fully stopped functioning for a second.
There's one thing. When she does say her parents are divorcing, and he's like, okay, well, how do you know that? She's like, well, there were papers. And he says
such a reassuring and calming voice.
Tyler, that's no. Okay, it's so, okay. The voice? Calming and reassuring. The actual
it's okay. It's okay if the advice is garbage. Like, because, I mean, it worked for a little.
What do you mean it's just papers? No one just gets divorce papers. Like, I don't understand. Like, it's funny because I think it only worked because it was Rick. I feel like if Yolanda or Courtney said papers
are
papers,
are you talking
that
would
have been like,
right?
Goodbye.
She
would
not have
away,
the same tolerance
for
them.
That's such a terrible advice, right?
Which makes sense because, like, you know, she's going through it right now.
It's so funny. But,
like, the fact that he, like, actually manages to, like, calm her down with, like, the worst advice in the world.
We just talked about Rick cannot help always talk about his problems. He talked about his problems again afterwards. He was like, it's just papers. If I were you, for me, he was like, I would want... But the thing is, like, I'm not dissing him for that because it was very... It's very sweet. It's just, like, he's saying, like, I would want to... I would talk to my parents if I could. Okay, wait. And then it gets better. And then... Chuck really does interrupt, and she's so happy to hear Chuck's voice, and you see, like, Rick absolutely go 10 times softer than he was already going. Like, he's so happy for her. I know we talked about this before, and we didn't talk about this before, but for you, the audience, you would have heard me already say this, but in the first episode when they all suited up and Beth was trying to get her goggles to go, Rick's watching her, and he's very fond of the way that she's trying to talk to, like, the goggles, and it's not really working. Like, he's smiling when he's watching her. So, you know, like Rick enjoys watching Beth interact with the goggles now. But she didn't, I guess, before, but now he, like, straight up does. And so, like, you see him, like, happy for her that she's got this working. And I like that from Beth's perspective, like, it shows Rick's stats and, like, Rick's concerned face. And it has, like, his height, which I'm pretty sure is wrong, by the way. I don't
Rick?
I think he's at least 6 foot. And it's, like, 5'11".
I think he could be 5'11".
Yeah. Isn't he? On the goggles. Oh, okay. I don't know. Also, the fact that Our Night was used as, like, an ending scene is also pretty surprising because that's, like, main couple energy. Like, usually, like a scene like that, like, an intimate scene like that is, like, used for... Like a main character's love interest, I would think. Like, I would expect that for Cameron and Courtney, and we never got that. So the fact that they used that for Rick and Beth, I think, was also equally surprisingly shocking about, like, the placement. I thought if we were going to get a scene like that, it would have happened earlier into the episode, not as, like, one of the final cliffhangers. So I think that was also interesting.
All right, so now we're going to jump into episode 4. So that starts with Artemis visiting her parents in jail. Now, they're not actually in this... Actually, no. I think they are in the same jail, but they're in different parts of the jail.
They are.
Because
they
Crusher
have
later...
rights with each other as
Yeah, so... Yes, but Artemis is having the two conversations at different times. I think that it's funny that one of the complaints that Artemis has is that there's no football Sunday pass. I get that it's a joke, but girl, it is June. Football Sunday is not going to start until September. It doesn't matter that they don't have Football Sunday pass. Like, it's not coming for a while.
Well,
like,
she's
even
like, if I
you're
complain
looking
about this now,
that's like
maybe if I
August. Maybe I can get it later, yeah.
Well, maybe she asked the kids, Maybe she asked the kids that she's in the foster
what
home with.
What team like, do they root
do you guys
for?
Get that? And they're like, no.
I really love the Crocs. They're honestly the best parents on the show.
They're
like, sorry,
funny.
Pat, you're not the best parents. The Crocs are absolutely the better parents on this show. Also, when Artemis is leaving and that prison guard is like being so rude to her, she's just like, what is happening?
Right.
And okay. So this episode is
she's just a child.
Weird. Right. But this episode is weird because it's like it's definitely camp, like almost through and through. But it's almost a new level where like the entire plot of this is pretty insane. Where you have two people that are breaking out of jail, they're going to their town, and then like
it's a Kim Possible level of it.
Seeing their daughter compete in a game. Like it's ridiculous, it's absurd. So the extra absurd things happening, like this guard being so rude, the foster mother being horrifically rude, which, yes, I understand that not everybody in the foster parent, like not every foster parent is perfect or like even close to it. Like a lot of them are like that. But you, I mean, that it's a very stereotypical. So I don't know. Everything just feels really cartoonish this episode, which I'm not inherently against,
they
but it's like this
this episode
compared to literally the next episode is in like a different plane of existence.
Yeah, this is like almost Disney Channel and in like but like femme de la femme Disney Channel, you know, like a very very good sweet
but like the
Zach
thing is
kind of episode where like you know it's just it's full of shenanigans that make no sense but like it's high quality entertainment
and like
it's kind of like
I
that.
Love it
but like it's the Crushers. They can get away with that, though. That's the thing. Like, no other... Maybe the Gambler we'll see in season three, but I feel like no other
they don't have, like, the personality
really
for it, you know?
This level of absurdity. And Barbara and Pat literally address it, like, within the episode. They're like, they're crazy. They're crazy people. Like, that's why... They're like, how is this
get
happening?
Another
because
job.
They're crazy. That's why. Like, you know.
Get another job.
Oh, yeah. That was... that was my notes. When the guard tells Artemis, like, laughing at her for being, like, having to go visit her parents once a week and then cutting her time short, which is so rude, and I think that could probably be illegal. I don't know. I feel like it's illegal.
Yeah.
It's a child. Like, she should... Anyways, when he, like, basically taunts her for having parents in prison, my notes for that was...
Right.
Why are you bullying a kid? Get a job. And then
get
I was, like,
another job.
So I'm like, get another job.
Go outside.
So then it opens to Beth's house. I don't think I've mentioned this yet on the podcast. I really love Beth's house. I don't know if you could see it in this episode, but they have silhouettes of the Beth Chapel family members on the wall, like a silhouette of Bridget, of James, of Beth. And it's very 70s to me. I love it. Like it just kind of fits in. Like Beth outside of her house, you're like, wow. She's eclectic, but Beth inside her house, you're like, ah, that's why she's eclectic.
And I love her aesthetic, though. It's really cute.
Oh, and in this scene, she's trying to get her parents. She's talking to her mom. Her mom can't find her keys. So relatable. That happens to my mom all the time. and she's trying to, she kind of gets her at a bad moment. But she's like, oh, you guys should go on a date. Like you used to at the mini putt-putt, the Blue Valley mini putt-putt. That line actually is very cute, but that line actually confused me, and I have to, I guess, rewatch when we go over episode 8 again, because I thought Beth was born in Omaha, right? Not at the Blue Valley Medical Center, and I thought that they moved to Blue Valley later on, but the way that she's implying this is that Beth and Bridget and James met in Blue Valley. They started dating, and then they went to, like, the Blue Valley putt-putt, and I got a little confused by that. I do just want to say, I desperately need a fight at the Blue Valley putt-putt, and I also need an hour night date at the Blue Valley putt-putt.
That would be fun.
Now
that
would
be
brought up.
That would be some
her mother
fun
says,
parts.
You should go with your friends, so please
one of them
me
is
see
right.
That.
I'm glad that Pat and Barbara are, like, finally, like, open with each other. You know, like they're talking about it and they're trying to figure out, like they're withholding information from Courtney, but I think that's fine that they did that. obviously later down the line it gets a little bit blown out of proportion. But I don't know. I think that it's nice to see them talking about all that like JSA stuff as parents too, I guess. I like that they're having that conversation. So then it cuts to Cindy in the tunnels, and she has so much trauma.
She does.
Like, we really don't get into it. Like, obviously we have the Shadowlands episode, but like, we don't see a whole lot past that, and I think that we really should. I think it would be nice to see more.
Yeah. I'm still shocked that Cindy calls Bobby mom. Like she honestly calls Bobby mom when she still also calls her actual mother, like, mommy, like, mom, you know? Like, it's just the mom trauma.
After Eclipso brings out her mother, he brings out the portrait of the theoretical Injustice Unlimited, which, foremost, that had a chokehold on me for a full week.
Wait, which one?
It was a glorious week of just staring at that gift and over. The Injustice Unlimited portrait. I was like, Cindy wants that. That's exactly what I want, too. Number two. Why did Eclipso put Mike in that portrait if Cindy never wanted him in the plan in the first place? And we totally talked about this in the last episode, but I'm not a huge fan, so we don't have to get into it outside of Adiba's thoughts on it. But I, as we stated, I am not a huge fan of them kind of just doing this fake out with Mike. I feel like it's weird that they did that if they weren't going to deliver on it in any capacity with other than him being kidnapped. So I feel like that whole thing is weird. Adiba, do you have any thoughts?
I don't know.
On
I
that?
Liked it because I feel like it was like getting Mike more involved in the plot, and I liked it, you know. Also, the interaction between Mike and Cindy, where Mike is like, "Do you want me to join you?" and then she's like, "No, I hate you. You're gonna be the hostage."
So you didn't mind the fact that it was fake?
I loved it.
Okay, it's not relatable for me, but that's okay.
No.
Yeah, I still think. I think, again, I think I mentioned before that I feel like Eclipso is a little bit, what's the word, omnipotent, in the sense that it knows stuff about people that, like, they don't even know that they know, and that's why it makes me wonder if, like, if Eclipso knew that, because, again, right, it was, like, everyone in the ISA has some sort of actual parent that's a villain. So I'm like, I don't know. I still think there's something fishy about Mike's past that we don't know. That would be the reason why Eclipso would help, like, Cindy say, like, that Mike belongs with that group, right? Because, again, I agree that she just wants to use Mike as bait is, like, not sinister enough. You know, it's not, she's done worse to people who she doesn't care about. So I feel like, I don't know, it's interesting. I wouldn't have been surprised if instead her plan was, actually, I'm going to recruit Mike, actually let him think he's going to become evil, and then I'm going to try to kill him, you know, like sacrifice him. That, like, not just as, like, bait, but, like, as actually, like, straight up, like murder. That, I think, would be a little bit more on Cindy's level.
So then it skips to Artemis pulling up to practice with her awful foster mother. I really want to see, like, a deep dive into Artemis's time in foster care, because she has, like, four foster siblings. Like, I need to know what that household dynamic was like. Like,
I want Isaac to be one of them, by the way. I feel like he should be.
Yeah, because we don't know where Isaac's living. I have a new.
Yeah. What is going on with Isaac?
No idea where Isaac is living. There is a article about Rift City getting turned into a bookstore, which is going to be the bookstore, the House of Secrets, which Courtney goes in later. So then we get to school. Courtney's running her mouth in the cafeteria. Like, obviously, Artemis is pretty mad already. And Courtney's not helping by bringing up her incarcerated parents to the point where Artemis crushes an apple. So, like, definitely is... has some kind of super strength or whatever.
Oh, also, She has beef with Yolanda. Like, she just hates the fact that, Yolanda doesn't say anything. And she's like, like, Courtney's the one that's attacking her. And she's, like, actually more offended that Yolanda's looking at her than Courtney actually saying this stuff to her. And she has beef with Beth, too, as we find out. So she
just has beef with everybody that sits at that loser table.
We see that Rick has aced his test again. So, you know, he gets that pass from Miss Woods. I will say, he's in Algebra 1, which doesn't make any sense to me as a sophomore. Because I was in Algebra 2 when I was a sophomore. And they're supposedly, like, one of the more advanced high schools in the country. So I feel like that would not make a whole lot of sense.
Why does Miss Woods have 6 clocks on her desk?
I never got that.
All ticking. 6 clocks. Not 2, not 3, 6.
I think it's because, like...
Is she related to the Clock King? To be determined.
I think it's
because,
like, kids give her, like, little gifts. You know how kids give, like, their teachers gifts and stuff?
Okay.
What if she... Oh, we know that?
You bring some home. You don't put all... Like, we don't know that.
I mean, it could be.
No, I think she has a fascination with clocks. Like, the thing is, they do stuff like that, like, on purpose, right? Like, so why did they start it off with... Like, they could have just had one clock.
Yeah.
If it really was just... like, to show that Rick was taking a time test, 1 o'clock will be good enough. They had 6. And later on, we find out Miss Woods says she has a troubled past and college was a fresh start and all that stuff. So that's why I'm like, maybe she has Clock King connections.
I don't know who Clock King is, but alrighty.
It would be fun.
So now we get to Isaac eating alone.
Right.
And he's eating that sandwich so aggressively.
He's got a lot of anger issues,
there's also, like, a
fly
in front of him. He does have a lot of anger issues.
Yeah, why is he all by himself? Like, is he missing class?
I think it's, like, he just has, like, a free period, you know?
He's being bullied?
Like, he just has, like, a spare.
They all had lunch, and then he has lunch way after all of them.
I just think he has, like, a spare class, you know? Because in high school, you would have, like, free periods. What if he just has one of those?
Sure, but it's
summer
school.
So it's like...
Oh, then he's probably just like...
You're going to condense the classes you have. I appreciate that he really is sus that Cindy is like, let's be friends. But he knows there's no right answer. Mm-hmm. Like, he can't say no thank you. But he doesn't exactly say yes please either. Like, he knows he's kind of doomed either way.
I think it's really interesting how Cindy approaches him because she goes the friend angle. Because Cindy genuinely does want friends. Like, she is really invested in that. So I think that it's fun that she's like, yeah, I'll just walk up to him and I'll be like, I'm going to be your friend now. Which it's almost sad in a way.
Went wild with Cindy and Isaac being bestie, like, theories, like, crack theories. Because they were like, yes, they should be best friends. They're both creepy ISA kids, and they should have, you know, like, a solidarity.
Also, he says, so how did your parents die, as his opener?
Yeah. Which is
because
so
he's curious.
Isaac.
Because he has a
Well, he is curious, but he's also, like,
he's
a
gossip
freak.
Girl.
I love how she doesn't even give him a good answer. She's just like, oh, horribly.
But the way that she says it, excellent line delivery.
The whole scene is very funny.
So
it was
love
very
the interactions between
both
the ISA
their reactions
kids.
To each other. Yeah, I know. It's like, but Isaac's reaction to Cindy are
there's not
priceless.
One interaction between two ISA kids, I don't think, that I haven't been like, oh, we're eating.
Now we have Paula and Crusher. Stop.
Love that you're Australian for a
Actually,
second.
Paula is their Paula could be their ship name. Paula and Crusher. Paula.
I love that.
I just created a ship name. Paula. You know what? I'm sticking with that. So they are in the pit stop and they have kidnapped Mike. And first of all, I found Pat is like, he sees that the crushers. Why am I naming them all these different names and none of them are right? Okay. Larry and Paula. Mm-hmm. It's because Larry has like 5 different names. Sportsmaster, Crusher, Lawrence. The Croc, I don't know, just Crusher, I think I already said that. He just has too many names, it gets confusing. But Pat knows that the Crocs have escaped prison because he's in his car, and Mike gives him a very stilted hostage message on his cell phone, and he sees the newspaper in his chair, like, the fact that he knows that they've escaped, so he's heading to the pit stop, and the way that he walks into the pit stop is, like, so nonchalant for knowing your son has literally been kidnapped by, like, psycho murderers. I was actually like, Pat, you should probably run a little faster. Like, your son, his life is on the line.
He's trying not to, like, raise gonna, like, any questions. Yeah. I feel like running
would have
been very suspicious.
I get that, but at the same time, it's like, I don't know. I feel like he would have run if it was Courtney. It just makes me feel a little bad for Mike that him, Pat seemed to be taking his time. But anyways... Yeah, it's just so, like, they show up, and they are crazy, and everyone knows it. Pat knows it. They know it. Barbara knows it. And I love Barbara's reaction when she finds out that the Crocs are there. She's like, why would you do this to me? She's like, it's almost like she was questioning her entire marriage. She was like, Pat, what's wrong with you? Did you bring them here? And the background stuff, like... What was your favorite thing that Paula and Larry did when they were in their house?
I think that entire conversation about... I mean, for Larry, it's the conversation where he's explaining how the Dragon King, what he did to the wizard's body, and he's just so casual about it.
Right.
He's like, oh, you won't
follow me. Yeah, and I wanted to know. Well, what was it? What did he do with the body? No, like, tell us, but he didn't, like, elaborate further, and that made me kind of sad. Also funny that, I also found it funny that, like, Paula was just picking up random stuff in the house and sniffing it, and then thinking it was disgusting, and then
does this have pesticides? You keep microplastics in your home? This is bad motherhood. Not motherhood, this is bad
Then they
mothering.
Were playing, like, fake baseball with, like, the vase.
Yeah.
All that background acting, it was like, I couldn't really pay attention to what Barbara and Pat were saying, because they were just too funny in the background.
Yeah. Also, my favorite Paula and Barb moment was when they're talking about, like, their kids, and they finally found something, like, you know, they finally found common ground, and then she catches, like, the little coffee cup. I love it. I think that the four of them go on, like, little double dates to, like, cute little restaurants and just, like, have, like, a fun night out, you know?
It's funny, too, because Artemis and Courtney really are very similar.
Uh-huh. Like, they are.
They're both extremely intense. And it's funny to me that Courtney thinks that Artemis is more intense than her, because not really.
No, they're both very intense.
They are the same level of intense, just on different, scales. Like,
I don't even think it's different scales. I just think it's because they want different things. So all that
intense
energy.
But the intensity level is 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not even a 10. Yeah. No, it's an 11. So it's an 11 out of 10. They're both very intense people. It's just channeled into different things.
Like,
so, you know, it, like, manifests differently.
Now we're at my probably favorite scene of potentially the entire season.
The milkshake scene?
Collective JSA scene.
I really love Yolanda's waitress era. I will say, when she walks over with the milkshakes to the table. Rick has a right to complain because he got the wrong flavor. Beth being like, I didn't want whipped cream. Shh, support your friend. It's whipped cream. You can just scoop it off. And you don't even get the whipped cream until the end. It's not like ice cream where the whipped cream is on top. Like, just don't eat it. Those are literally all my notes on that scene. So go ahead.
Oh, that's it?
Oh, really?
Oh, okay.
That's it.
Oh my god. I'm realizing we are very different.
Sorry.
Yeah, I squealed with excitement when I saw Yolanda in her waitress outfit, because it's so cute. I love that she has the other waitress, Maria, coaching her, and I think that's actually very symbolic, because her mother is also named Maria. So it's like good Maria and bad Maria. And this Maria is like the loving mother figure that she should be having.
Also, just realized.
The Maria at home is just discouraging all the time. What?
Also, I just realized, you know how Maria was the one who set up Pat and Barb at the diner? Yes. Yolanda accidentally kind of does that with Rick and Beth. And Maria's the one training.
I know, that's what...
I love that.
I know, that's what I want. I know, it's amazing. So I love that. Mm. And I also love that, like, it seems to be, like, a trend for Yolanda to just mix stuff up, right? Like, it's kind of, like, it wasn't even just with the milkshakes. Mm-hmm. Like, throughout her entire waitress run, which is okay. Like, it's a new job. It's not always the easiest to remember orders, so, like, I'm not judging her for it, but it is just funny in the context that she can't remember superhero names at all, that she can't remember people's orders at all.
Like, when I tell you, Yolanda's a comedian, she's a true, true comedian. She's really funny. Yeah.
The other thing that I liked was Rick, like, slouching while he's reading his book, and then only, like, sitting up when Yolanda shows up with their milkshakes. Uh-huh. Okay. The thing was with the milkshakes, okay? It's very important. Courtney came in after Rick and Beth.
Right.
Because Rick and Beth ordered something. Courtney didn't last long enough to even, like, stay and actually order something. Like, she probably went to the library, and then they probably decided to meet up at the diner, go over information, and then give Yolanda, like, a rundown. And then Courtney ran off to go to the youth bookstore, left Rick and Beth there. Like, she didn't even wait to see what they were going to do. Like, she was just like, okay, bye. Meet up here again in another X amount of time. But the fact that Rick and Beth actually ordered, like, something to eat tells me that they were there for a while
before
just the two of them.
That's so cute.
I love that. It's basically a date. It's like a library study date.
Oh my god.
Which is throwback to, like, season one when they were studying for the tunnels. And Rick was like, I'm not reading. I don't care.
Yeah.
And that time he's actually doing the reading. Like, you see him. He's actually reading. So he's learned. This scene, I just want to bottle it up and sprinkle it all over season three.
Exactly.
All I want.
Exactly.
It's like all I want.
Because it's like, she's so protective over Yolanda's feelings. And she just really, really wants Yolanda's first day to go so, so well. That she's shooting Rick, like, daggers, being like, shut up. If you ever say a single word, if you ever say something wrong with your milkshake, I'm gonna kill you.
Rick drops the most himbo line in the history of the show with the, I have to feed the dog, with that look on his face. That killed me.
Oh my
Rick
god.
Rick Tyler, what was that? And it's the look on his face when he lied, too. It was so bad, like, in affectionate way.
And Yolanda's like, are you sure? Like, are you 100% sure about
like,
this?
Are you
and
he's kidding like, me right now?
Yeah.
How does Rick even afford all of this food?
That's another question. I think he just uses Yolanda's, like, employee discount to get food. And the little clink of their milkshakes. Oh, I love that scene.
The toast. They toasted.
I edit the hell
out of that. Okay, I have to give... Everyone loved it. It's like the most cute little thing that they've done, and especially like the fact that like Rick laughs afterwards,
right?
Like he thinks it was cute. That's cute. Like the fact that he's the one that thought that it was especially cute, not Beth.
Cindy shows Isaac the tunnels. Yes, the tunnels are like half crushed, which I kind of love that they're like keeping it like left over, like they're decrepit and unkempt and whatever. I enjoy that. I love that Cindy just kind of spews lies at Isaac. And it's like, they killed your father.
Yeah,
and your mother.
She doesn't even know
and,
that she...
Did we talk about the hunting incident?
The world. Like...
The hunting incident cover-up? Is that
very
already happened?
Briefly,
yeah. We touched on it.
Yeah, very briefly. But you can continue. What do you want to say?
No, I was just wondering if you did, because I left
the Isaac
at about
blog.
That time.
Because we talked about Isaac blog and, like, as a joke theory. And said,
gotcha.
He knows. He totally knows. There was no hunt.
Right,
like,
right. Okay.
Anaya's not the type of person to do hunting either. So, yeah. Also, so interested about the fiddler. Isaac looks so spooked, too, when Cindy puts the violin, like, the fiddle on the table.
Yeah.
He, like, fully turns around and, like, he almost, like had a heart attack. And it was quite funny.
Maybe when he was, like, a kid, it was lying around once, and he, like touched it, and his dad or his mom
maybe
was
like,
don't touch
ghost.
That. You can't touch that. Yeah,
he's
I don't know.
He's truly terrified at looking at
he
that.
Is...
I think there's a backstory to that. And he says, I can't play that. The way he says it is like, yeah, there's story there. And then,
yeah,
I mean, for someone who can't play that, he was able to play it very, very well. So maybe you're right in right. the sense that his father used to play that, and he's like, I actually, like, that's like a sacred thing. I actually can't play that. Like, that's what he means. Not that I can't play
right.
the violin. I just don't want to play that thing. Like, that thing's supposed to be locked up somewhere.
I also love the fiddler theme, which I feel like it's, we might have heard the fiddler theme mm-hmm. before. But it's fun that they're playing it for Isaac now. Like, I like when they do the little thing where they play the parent theme for the kid. I enjoy that a lot.
I'm also obsessed with the way that Cindy says, oh, you'll learn. She's like, you're gonna learn whether you like it or not, because we're besties.
She made a friend.
We move back to the bookstore where the Shade is running scare tactics to Courtney. Or on Courtney, mm-hmm. I guess I should say. I love that he is like... Or, sorry, I love that Courtney is like, you're going to, like, get the diamond to do something bad. Like, she is literally no idea. She's just talking out of her ass. Mm-hmm. And, like...
She has no idea what she's saying.
I also talk out of my ass a lot.
Mm-hmm. She's just saying things. And you know what? I find that very relatable. It is representation for me, because I too just say random things at random times.
Oh, also, what do you think, Cam, about the concept of him saying, the Shade saying, there's a difference between being bad and being evil?
I love it. Same. That is a certified Cameron Puccio banger. Or not me banger, but like...
Okay.
Like, that's a quote that I enjoy a lot.
Yes.
In terms of fictional characters, because I feel like a lot of the times you get villains who, like, once they do a mm-hmm. good thing, they're just, like, considered to be redeemed. And I don't like that pattern. I think that some villains should stay irredeemable, but that they yes. should be doing, like, good things on the side. Because people are complicated, right? And so, also, good people do bad things all the time.
Yeah.
So, like, why would it be the opposite that bad people wouldn't be able to do good things? And, yeah, there certainly is a difference between, like, full-blown, unadulterated, mm-hmm. irredeemable evil versus, like, just doing bad things from time to time. So I really appreciate the Shade coming out to Courtney, not coming out to her.
He could.
But, like, spelling her out for her.
Maybe he did do that.
Where's the dog memes? Hold on.
Okay,
I have to.
No, we can't do that right now. Okay, what was I gonna say? Oh, yeah, it's, like, it's true. Like, the Shade is just not on a brewing wave senior level, like, you know, so no. That's the kind of example that I could think about if we were gonna say, oh, a ISA member who's bad and then one who's evil. I also wouldn't put the gambler on the same level as Dragon King or Brainwave senior as well,
right?
So far, I know he killed people with his little pistol, but, like, so far I wouldn't put him there. Now we're at the actual football game. I have to say, the actual football recruiter creeps me out. Am I alone?
I don't know why he would be on the field. I feel like that's a little bit odd. I also feel like you wouldn't go to a tryout. You would go to a game. I cannot believe that the Crocs didn't get caught here. Like, they're, like, cheering and waving and yelling. Like,
and the jig Pat was up. Pat knew everyone there. He was like, hi, Nance, right. Hi, Bob, hi, so-and-so. So wouldn't it be, like, the same way where they used to also live there, too, and all those people who have children literally in Artemis's football team would recognize the most aggressive, most annoying, most obnoxious mm-hmm. parents, literally, and the actual gym teacher of the school sitting in the bleachers? So confused by that.
Yeah, no, they would absolutely. There's not much that actually happens in the scene. Like, it's
mm-hmm.
like, it's not a slow-paced scene by any means, but I don't think there's a whole lot to say on it. It's just Artemis is doing poorly. She sees her parents. She's encouraged. She does well. Yeah. Eclipso. Cindy comes in with the Eclipso.
I really like Cindy's outfit.
Ruins everything. She attacks
Courtney. Oh, yeah, that's quite the dress. The way that Crusher says, yeah. Well, that really got away from her, didn't it?
I like that. Pressure's fun. Like,
but I really, really felt bad for Artemis, too, because she really believed that her parents were innocent. And she's just a kid, you know? Like,
right.
Parents are already in jail. Right. She sees the FBI trying to shoot her parents down. That is so traumatic. In a way, that's like, you know, I would feel like, even though it was very short and she didn't get the same length of, like, the target of Eclipso for Rick and Yolanda and Beth, it's, I would put what Artemis saw on the same level as, like, what Rick saw. Mm-hmm. Like, in terms of, like, the for thing sure. that you're absolutely the most scared of. Because that's all she knew, you know? Like, her parents were literally her right. whole world. And, like, it wasn't just, like, one FBI agent. It was, like, yeah. the whole SWAT team. And she also basically did the exact same thing that Rick did of beating someone up and not realizing that it was not the person yeah. that yeah, it was interesting. Because rewatching it, I was like, it's the same format, actually. So it's surprising that we were so surprised. Like, we weren't that surprised, but we were surprised. Like, when Rick goes through the same thing.
Yeah.
But I'm also surprised that we didn't pick it up sooner, because they just literally did that with Artemis.
I'm really glad that Crusher and Paula did end up telling her mm-hmm. the truth. Because I feel like...
Me too.
That just shows how, like, how they are actually good parents. Because I presume that, like, them actually getting arrested must have been, like, it happened when they were at home together or something like that, and Artemis probably saw it, and they were probably, like, pretty panicked or whatever. And so this moment presumably would be them getting to say goodbye to her on their own terms, which I think is really nice
yeah.
that they get the opportunity to have. And she does deserve to know.
Yeah.
100%. Do they say that they were specifically in the ISA yet, or is that just she learns
no,
that from
because
Cindy,
then
like,
Cindy
2 seconds
says,
later?
Cindy's later is like, oh, this is a team that your parents were on, and it's like gets
right,
her interested.
Okay.
But they don't yeah. tell her all those details, and I also think that's smart, because why are you going to traumatize your kid that much more
right,
with
right,
no
right,
time
right.
to actually comfort her with that? But it's funny, too, because from episode one, you see Artemis kind of... Like, Artemis with her football hockey friends right before when she attacked Courtney in the first episode of the season, she's, like, almost spinning these stories to try to make it seem like her parents being in jail don't bother her as bad as it really does, and it's not as big of a deal as it really is.
So then it cuts to Barbara and Pat. They're talking about should they tell them the whole truth. They decide against it. Cut to Courtney. She's in her bedroom. Staff wants her to study, points out that it's past curfew. She still goes out all the same to meet the shade. And then we cut to Beth in her bedroom. Tam,
I
know you love her bedroom.
Thing.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
I do too.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Oh, I do. One thing, Courtney has an algebra textbook, but she didn't fail math. She only failed history.
Yeah, she didn't fail algebra. I don't know why they put it there. Maybe it's just like generic summer school. You have to retake everything. I'm not
no,
sure.
No, I think it's for the
they
aesthetic.
They only ever show
that's,
her in the history
that
class.
That shouldn't be how it works.
Honestly, I think it's because yeah, Courtney it just didn't go back to school when she was supposed to return the textbook. So she just kept it. Like, she forgot to go to school the day they were supposed to return textbooks.
Yeah, I do. I do love Beth's bedroom. Are we going to jump forward
Can
again?
We please? I really want to talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, Beth Chappell, fashion is
yes,
number one.
Absolutely.
She has sketches all over her mm-hmm. room. I am like 9 on 10, 10 on 10, pretty certain that she sketched all
she
of
did.
Those by herself. And I would not put it past mm-hmm. her that almost every outfit that she actually wears, she probably formulated that mm-hmm. herself. Like, she designed it, like, not by scratch necessarily,
yeah,
but like in the sense of, like, she put it together as outfits and then she puts it on her wall and that's what she chooses to wear that day, which is amazing,
which makes sense.
Also means she's a good artist
because Beth's outfits
it makes
are
sense.
Always incredibly put
she's
together
very critical she's critical she's very creative
yeah.
She has Twilight as a book that's in her little book tray, which is really cool. And she also
she
has
does.
a novel about yeah she does she has I don't remember. I haven't read the Twilight books. I've only seen the movies, so I don't remember which was one of the chess mm-hmm. piece, like the king.
That's the last one.
How do you know that?
Done.
Okay, Breaking Dawn.
Because my mom had it when I was a kid. That's how I know it.
She has Breaking Dawn, her little book cart. It's very cute. She also has, you can't actually see it in this episode. I think you see it in episode 8. But she has this, like, I don't even know what to call it, but a very political book about, like, Barack Obama's time in office. But it's not necessarily painting Barack Obama in the best light. And I actually like that because it kind of shows that, like, Beth is very critical and, like, literally making sure that she has her own opinions about everything. And she's not just going to want to read one side. She reads everything. And that's also, that's in her character, that she doesn't just take, except for this one thing with the whole, the shade kill Dr. McNider, which she's wrong about. And she only takes one person's word for it. For everything else, she really does, like, read all her sources. So I kind of like that she's such a bibliophile for that. What else is in her room? I don't remember at this moment. I really like it. And it's a big room.
It is.
We knew that because she's a rich little girl.
Yeah, her room is huge. But also, I just want to say, like, the fact that she got Chuck back online and made contact with somebody in another dimension, like, all on her own.
Oh, yeah. On a MacBook.
Exactly.
Air.
She had a MacBook and a dream, and she made it work.
Just the reveal of Dr. McNider being in the Shadowlands, that slapped. I love that incredible ending.
I will say, I thought it was a little silly that Beth said out loud, I think Dr. Midnight is alive. Oh. Because, like, anyone with a brain watching the scene knew that that's what she thought, and that was the takeaway.
No, but I love it, though. Like, she just,
so,
like,
I thought that was kind
herself
of nailing it a little bit too hard on the head.
I would have liked if instead of her saying that, she kind of, like, fell onto her bed and, like, kind of squealed with excitement because she's like,
right,
Dr.
That would have been so cool.
Like, it's real. Like, he's, you know, not by
well,
saying,
I think
I
she
think
would be more
alive,
concerned
being,
immediately.
Like,
oh,
yes,
yeah,
he's
wouldn't
still
she
alive. Yeah. Well, she could be like, because she has, like, huge fangirl, like,
because, like, it's Dr. Midnight. Like, that's her mentor.
So, what if, like, first she was, like, super excited. She's like, Dr. Midnight! And then she goes, Dr. Midnight! And then it just ends like that. That would have been fun.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. I would like that. Yeah. So now Adiba's going to go to sleep, and we're going to record what you guys all heard one calendar week ago.
Yeah.
We're time traveling. Actually, you guys are time traveling. I'm staying.
Well, Adiba's not. Adiba's going to blink out of existence.
Yeah.
So.
For like a week.
All right. Well,
sorry.
So.
That's okay.
Thank you very much for. Thank you very much. Yeah, that works. Thank you so much for listening. You can follow the podcast at Star Squadcast on Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter. You can follow me at CleoNap00 on Twitter or at Blue Valley Breaking News on Tumblr.
You can find me at Gert Starlight on every platform.
I'm Tam, and you can follow me at That Killer Vibe on Instagram or Our Nights on Tumblr.
All right. Thank you so much again. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.